Congressman Golden on federal relief and the head of the Jackson Lab on the science of COVID-19. Congressman Jared Golden's office says they've shifted their entire operation to focus on being a resource for Maine people during the coronavirus crisis. The congressman joins us today to answer your questions about the federal relief package passed last week. Who qualifies for aid? How to sign up? Where to turn if you're unsure? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Golden joins us for the first hour of the program. Then at 2 o'clock, our guest is Dr. Edison Liu, head of the Jackson Laboratory. Not only does the Jackson Lab contribute to COVID-19 research, but Dr. Liu has a background in helping to fight the SARS outbreak. From government help to hard science on Maine Calling today. But first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we continue our two-hour special Maine Calling programs. In our first hour, we focus on the federal CARES Act, the massive relief bill that passed Congress last week, and how it might help people in Maine. Second District Congressman Jared Golden joins us for the first hour. In our second hour, we will speak with the head of the Jackson Laboratory about the pandemic and get answers to your questions about the science and the spread of COVID-19. Joining me now, Jared Golden. He represents Maine's 2nd Congressional District. He serves on the Small Business Committee and the Armed Services Committee. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how to access federal aid or whether you qualify? Have you applied for a business loan? Share your stories and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Representative Golden, thank you so much for joining us today on Maine Calling. Joining us from Lewiston, I understand.
That's right, Jennifer, right here in Lewiston, and always a pleasure to join you. It's been a while.
All right. Yeah, it has been. So I understand that you have shifted your entire operation, all your staff in both Washington and in your Maine offices, to focusing on the COVID-19 response. What does this mean for day-to-day operations for you?
Well, first of all, several weeks ago, Jennifer, when it became apparent that coronavirus was in the United States and was likely to spread widely, we started to move towards working remotely. First of all, for people in the Maine offices and the DC offices, getting to a place where we could maintain our operations while working remotely. Here in Maine, some of my staff may opt to work in our offices, but our offices are closed to the public for public safety concerns. But that being said, we are 100% operational, doing the kinds of constituent service calls, helping people with things like struggles they might be having with Social Security or with Medicare or Medicaid, helping veterans, the day-to-day constituent services that our office has been conducting since I got into office, Jennifer. But at the same time, we quickly were starting to position ourselves. What I've said is we want to be outward facing and making sure that we are reaching out to the community and going to have no kind of hiccup in operations, just be able to receive calls from business owners, from individuals if they lost their jobs, and do what we can to help. So, I'm excited that we've been successful, pleased that we are, on the phone lines and helping out.
Have you been able to keep up with the volume of calls? Has it been overwhelming?
I think that the staff is working awfully hard and doing their best to keep up with the volume of calls. I don't know that it is quite the same as what they might be experiencing at the Maine Department of Labor, which you can imagine is completely underwater with calls for assistance with the rising unemployment just at unprecedented levels, not only here in Maine but across the country. But call volume is high and not just focused on COVID-19, Jennifer, but like I said, a lot of the other constituent service requests that people have, those needs haven't gone away either. So we're staying focused on all of that.
Let's talk broadly about the package that was passed and by Congress last Friday and the president signed. Now that we're a few days in, what do you view as the most critical piece moving forward? What is most important now that this has passed?
Well, for me, the top focus of that legislation needed to stay on the public health response, Jennifer, in particular, frontline needs at hospitals and for healthcare workers who are providing care to those who are ill or coming in to get tested because of coronavirus, making sure they have the supplies they need, I think was my top priority, and likely the I think all my colleagues here in the main delegation felt that way. So the most important part of the bill was certainly the money set aside to go to hospitals and just trying to do more to procure the equipment that they need. So with that, I think it's important that the delegation and the governor's administration continue to work and try and do our part to coordinate efforts to make sure that we're getting the PPE that we need for medical workers, that tests are available, and that we're getting the state what it needs to do the very best that it can in how we respond to this. I think you know likely several weeks out before we anticipate that we may see the highest kind of caseload. Secondly, I would say, Jennifer, I think the devil is in the details on the relief package, particularly for small businesses, so many of which here in Maine have been very, very deeply impacted with their revenue being almost completely cut off as a result of the social distancing, self-quarantining, the closures that have taken place necessary to try and stop the spread. But I think that we need to make sure that as a state, as a delegation, that everyone who can be a part of an effort, like the Chambers of Commerce, as an example, need to work together with the Maine Department of Labor, with the Maine Small Business Administration, to try and help our businesses be as efficient as possible in applying for the help that is made available to them through that relief package that passed through Congress last Friday. Because I think that that's where we'll find out how successful this was or was not for Maine. Is how quickly are we able to help businesses get the help that they need to maintain payroll, to be able to continue to pay the bills, the utilities, the mortgage, whatever it may be, so that they are able to survive as a business and hopefully be able to get operations back up and running as soon as possible.
What information do you have about that speed, both for the loans for small businesses and also for the money for individuals and families?
Well, as far as money for individuals, my understanding, I think that information has come out a little bit more clear and probably reached a broader audience, Jennifer. So people who filed 2018 or 2019 tax returns and who received their tax returns through direct deposit, and so they have given the federal government their direct deposit information, can expect that $1,200 or per individual, 24 for a household, plus additional payments for dependents, I believe up to $3,000 per household. They can expect those to just come automatically. Off the top of my head, maybe you remember, I don't the exact date that the Secretary of the Treasury is estimating, but I think that is probably a couple of weeks out yet. For people who haven't traditionally filed their taxes for various purposes, they are working on creating a platform online where people will be able to go in and provide their direct deposit information. That is not yet available, is all I can tell you, Jennifer. And beyond that, I think they're working on other ways for people to receive those payments in the mail as a last option, snail mail. But those payments will be available through the end of the year for those people who haven't filed their taxes yet. And I think, you know, more on that to come. In regards
to
Do you have any more?
Yeah, the small business loans. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, something that I always tell my staff, and, you know, it can be, I think, at a time like this, hard for people to hear, hard for people follow this mindset. But in the Marines, we always said under a lot of pressure that slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And so with the development of a new program like this, this was a law passed on Friday. The SBA is doing their best to turn around the guidelines and get that information out to businesses. But what's most important is that we don't rush it and have mistakes, because that will only slow things down on the back end. So I think that they are doing their best to move quickly but efficiently. And not trying to roll out information about how to apply for those new loans that would be forgivable for businesses that use it to maintain payroll. They're trying to take their time, Jennifer, and I think that's important. So there's no new updates on that at this point. I listened to the segment you had yesterday with Congresswoman Pingree and Director Amy Bassett from the Maine SBA, and just know that they are positioning themselves to start working with small businesses the moment that the federal head of the SBA gives them the green light.
You mentioned earlier how Maine's Department of Labor, as well as other state departments of labor all over the country, are really just overwhelmed by the huge surge in calls. I mean, just unprecedented rise in number of people applying for unemployment benefits. Is there anything Congress can do to help these state agencies, catch up?
Well, I think this is why people need to remember that having these agencies well funded and staffed appropriately is important at times like this. And it's not something that you can just turn on and off. You have to have the staffing levels you need to handle a crisis like this, an economic one in this instance, before it begins. You can't just start hiring people in the midst of it. You can certainly try, but by then you're playing catch up. So understanding the importance of having these government agencies get the resources they need, I think, is one thing that we all need to remember, Jennifer. We did take steps at the very beginning. I think it was the first of all, with SBA, back in March 6, Congress passed the first coronavirus response package. We actually gave $20 million to the SBA at that time, knowing that their administrative expenses for giving out disaster loans to small businesses would be going up, so trying to get them a little bit of help early on. We also sent, with the second bill that we passed, about $1 billion more dollars to states to cover their rising unemployment insurance costs, as well as expanded coverage, and added an additional 13 weeks of eligibility for those who might have already exhausted the 26-week cap on collecting unemployment. Those were just early steps. The most recent bill obviously opened up eligibility even more and added $600 per week in the amount of income that will be paid out to people, but that is not yet up and running. This most additional, these most recent changes to the program, I think, just like the SBA loan program, they're waiting to get more information out as quickly as possible to the states. So people should wait, I think, if they are going to be applying under these new eligibility criteria or seeking that additional $600 per week. It's still a little bit of time to go there, Jennifer. But I want people to step back and think, first of all, we always expect government to provide the best service possible. And I know that the people working on the front lines are striving to do their very best with the resources that they have. But to put this in, provide a little bit of scale here, I think the largest one-week rise in unemployment that we have since we've been recording that kind of data, Jennifer, around the country was about 500,000 people in 1 week. You saw the numbers last week announced, or about 3.3 million new applicants for unemployment, just blowing that previous record from around the 2008 Great Recession right out of the water. This is, I think, like nothing we've seen before, and estimates are another 3 million or more likely being announced on Thursday of this week, and always that data is a week behind. And the measures that have been driving this rising unemployment in order to respond to the coronavirus aren't going anywhere this week, or perhaps for many weeks to come, as we've seen the president has now said that many of these measures will be in place throughout the month of April. So this is a staggering unemployment crisis, Jennifer, and therefore Across the country, I think that Department of Labor staff are going to be working as hard as they can, but they are going to be overloaded.
Congressman Golden, before we go to listener questions, I want to ask you about a couple items that have been in the news in the past couple days. The first is the suggestion that there might be a temporary rolling back of tariffs. Is that something that you would support?
To be honest, Jennifer, that's the first I've heard of this.
Okay.
Look, I've stayed 100% focused on right now. For me, top priority is, again, connecting small businesses with the assistance as soon as that information becomes available, making sure that my staff is as well-positioned as they can be to help people with their constituent service requests and phone calls is really where my head is at right now. So, that has a lot to do with, the president's policies on trade and tariffs. Something that I do care about, but right now I'm staying focused on the things that I feel like my office, my staff can control.
Okay, and I'll just throw out the next one. Speaker Pelosi told the New York Times she would like to see the so-called SALT rolled back. She wants to see people have the ability to deduct state and local taxes as possibly the next phase of this relief, in some sort of next phase of a relief package. Is that something you've considered at all?
Well, I personally believe that we should stay focused on this third bill that just became a law and trying to make sure that it delivers on its promises by focusing on implementation, by focusing on congressional oversight to make sure that that money gets used the way that it should be used to help the people that need that help the most. I don't think it's time to be moving on from that, Jennifer, as we think about what next steps may be. Some people are already thinking about how we kickstart our economy when we come out the backside of this pandemic crisis. I think certainly some people may be thinking about that. People are talking about doing infrastructure investments and other things, but I think it's too soon to be moving on from just trying to, address this crisis head on right now, Jennifer. The House of Representatives passed a bill to do away with the changes that were made to state and local tax deductions, as you said, SALT, that were made in the 2017 tax law. And I've actually voted against that. I did not support it. Maine is not a state that has a lot of individual households that were impacted by that change. We don't have as many, affluent or very wealthy households like maybe a place like California or New York. So I voted against that change in December of last year because it wasn't going to have a positive impact on Maine and was going to take revenue away from the government that I thought could be going towards important things that Mainers need help with. And right now in the midst of this crisis, I think we all feel like the federal government needs to be doing more to procure supplies, medical supplies, and things of that nature. So that doesn't sound like a change I would be very supportive of. But I think that conversation is way too early right now anyway.
All right. Well, we're speaking with 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden. So many questions coming in already. We'll get to those after a break. If you have a question about the federal relief package that passed on Friday and as it's being implemented in the days and weeks ahead, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Cancer Specialists. Proud to support the healthcare workers who are keeping people safe at this critical time, and Maine Public for keeping Mainers informed. And Lamy Wellahan, a Maine family-owned shoe store since 1914, committed to keeping the entire family comfortable, healthy, warm, and dry.
COVID-19 has changed daily life in the U.S., and with news breaking by the hour, it can be hard to stay up to date. I'm Ari Shapiro. Join us every weekday for a new live conversation about the disease, what you need to know, what's coming next, and we'll answer your questions. The National Conversation with All Things Considered, live every weekday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, from NPR News.
Coming up tonight at 9 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. During times like this, you want reliable news, the truth, a trusted source for your information. That's why you're listening to Maine Public Radio and why you also might appreciate Maine Public Television. Each evening between 5 and 6, there's a full hour of BBC News with a global perspective on the top news of the day. Following that at 6 o'clock, there's the PBS News Hour, which is also available at 7 each evening, a full hour of in-depth analysis of the day's events and issues. The Maine Public Television Early Evening News Block schedule can be seen at mainepublic.org. Please click on the television drop-down to see it.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how the new CARES Act can help people who are struggling during the coronavirus crisis. My guest, Congressman Jared Golden, who represents Maine's 2nd Congressional District. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with an email. This is from Yvonne. She writes, I am a full-time college student. Because I am claimed as a dependent by my parents, I am not eligible for a federal stimulus check, nor will my parents receive additional aid because I'm over 17. I lost my job when school closed, but did not make enough money to qualify for unemployment benefits. Young Americans like me still need to pay our bills. What do we do? Will we be included in the next relief package?
That's a great question coming in there, Jennifer, and I am aware that the bill that was passed is not perfect. In fact, far from it. I ended up supporting it because of the aspects of it that I thought were just too critical and had to be supported right now. But I think some college students are not alone in having been excluded for eligibility of the those direct cash payments to families. Also, some other forms of adult dependence left out, and others. In regards to whether or not we could fix that in a fourth package, I guess I would just say it's not 100% certain that there will be a fourth bill. A lot of people are talking about a fourth bill in the month or 2 months, kind of window ahead. But just yesterday, I was seeing some pushback from some people, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy saying he didn't really think it would be necessary for Congress to come back in and pass a fourth bill. So I can't answer the question at this point.
Sure. We'll go to Ann, who's calling from Wells. Go ahead, Ann.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question in regard to the stimulus. I am a senior citizen, but I am no longer with my husband. I am separated. He is in another state. The account that I had that would have been the 2018 account that our tax return money came into, I am no longer on that account. Now, will I be able to go on once the IRS tax site is up? Will I be able to go on that site and change the direct deposit? I'm kind of confused as to what to do. I don't know if you can give me some insight. I do get Social Security, of course, but I thought at one point maybe it would go into that account, but from what all the things that I've read, it will go into the account that your tax return money, if you got any, it would go into that account. Like I said, I'm no longer with him. We're separated, and he's in another state. Can you tell me what I should do?
Ann, thanks for your question. Congressman?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is I believe I heard you were calling in from Wells. You could call Congresswoman Pingree's office, one of her offices, or either of our two senators. Obviously, we are willing to help you as well. If you're not able to get through to any of them, you could call perhaps my Lewiston office, and someone would work with you. The federal government only has the most recent information that you've provided to them in regards to where to send that. So you do have a special case here. I think that you should probably contact one of these offices and ask if we can help you get an answer to your question about how to handle that and make sure that the you know, they may still consider that you may be filing jointly since you haven't filed for 2019 yet. It sounds like you haven't yet as an individual. So, but to answer what I do know about the question, would you be able to go into the IRS site and put in your new direct deposit information? Yes, in theory, but I think more importantly would be making sure that they're aware that you are no longer going to be filing jointly in 2019.
Anne, thanks for your question. We'll go to Abbott and Clayton. Hi, Clayton. Go ahead. Clayton, are you there?
Yes, hello. Yes, the Kennedy Center. They got what, $35 million? I'd like to know, what has that got to do with the virus? That young college student that's looking for some money, why don't we have her go down to the Kennedy Center and maybe they can give her a job?
Clayton, thanks for your question. Congressman?
Yeah, this is a great question. And before I answer, I did want to say, Jennifer, to the college student who called in, mentioned that they lost, he or she lost their job because of the closure, I'm assuming, on campus. If that was a program, like a student employment program funded through like Pell Grants or Stafford or you know, something like that, like a job placement on campus, my understanding is that money has been made available to try and keep that those paychecks flowing to students who have lost their on-campus job as a result of school closure. So I hope that they'll reach out to someone's congressional office or to the university to inquire about that, hopefully for a little bit of assistance. In regards to the Kennedy Center, I was just on a phone call yesterday with someone from their legislative affairs shop asking for all of the communications between the Kennedy Center and the appropriations team that put together that package to understand why that money was deemed necessary in this last bill. I wasn't sure that it seemed like as much of an emergency as some others. Certainly, I understand that that is a congressionally chartered center, and therefore something that the federal government has responsibility for. So I think it was $25 million in my understanding, or hope, obviously, would be used to maintain the employees at the Kennedy Center. But we just saw an announcement yesterday or the day before that they were laying like 100 people off. So I have questions. I'm not happy about it, and I am going to be pushing to get more information about that. I agree with the caller. I put out statements in advance during the development of this bill saying that it should be 100% focused on the critical needs only. And if you go and look at the statement that we put up on Facebook last Friday, as this bill was passing into law, I made very clear that I thought that the you know, kind of negotiations that went into this bill, there's some things in here that give me a lot of concern, and I would have preferred to see a lot more money going to people like the college student that called in. So I agree with the caller. It's an issue and one that I'm going to continue to dig into.
All right, Clayton, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from Jim. I deliver meals in my hometown of Wayne. Several of my clients are confused by conflicting things they see on the internet. Can you suggest a very reliable place to which I can refer them for ongoing and regularly accurate answers? And I think most of this really had to do with the aid that may be coming to individuals or is coming to individuals.
I think without question, the most effective information is going to be right at the government agency website. So if it's, you know, public health information, it's cdc.gov or Maine CDC. If it is about the loan assistance forgiveness program for payroll protection, it's going to be at the Small Business Administration website at sba.gov. You know, same for people who are looking for information about applying for unemployment. It's going to be with the Maine Department of Labor. That's where you're going to get the most reliable information.
All right, we're going to go to Dean, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Dean, go ahead.
Hi, I have not yet been able to file taxes for 2019, and I'm curious about the stimulus. I did file in 2018, but I also had a daughter this previous year, so I didn't have that dependent on my 2018 taxes, and I was just curious if I would be able to, after the fact, get that additional stimulus from having a dependent this time around.
Congressman Golden?
I suspect the answer is yes. It might take you some time to clear that up. They're likely to send you a direct payment based upon your 2018 filing, and you'll have to, I think, start the process of working with them to update for your different status with a dependent. So I'd keep an eye on it, but my guess is you will probably receive a $1,200 check, a direct deposit based upon your 2018 filing, but you will have the opportunity to update that information based upon the new information.
All right, Dean, thanks for your question and good luck to you. We are going to go to Jan, who's calling from Steuben. Hi, Jan, go ahead.
Hello. I'm calling because I was wondering if the Maine legislature is considering a stay-at-home order based on the fact that the science that we know of tells us the best way to prevent the outbreak is to stay at home. And the fact that we are limited in Maine with ICU beds and ventilators, why haven't we done it? Are we considering it?
Sure, Jan. Jan, you know, Congressman Golden represents, he's in the federal government and in Congress. Do you have a question about congressional action?
Well, let me just say, Jennifer, that is a decision that's going to be coming out of the governor's administration. I think Governor Mills is doing a good job. Dr. Shaw at Maine CDC doing a great job. And I'm sure that Governor Mills is very much relying upon information from public health experts like Dr. Shaw in determining whether or not it is time for something like a stay-at-home order in regards to Maine. What we see in, I think, a big country like Maine is that what is appropriate and necessary at one time in one part of the country may not be what's necessary in another. In that situation could reverse itself within a matter of weeks. And so flexibility at the local level and state by state, I think, is what this time calls for. And I would continue to watch to see what information is coming out of the governor's administration and checking in with Maine CDC website for the most up-to-date safety information.
All right. Well, thank you. And Jan, thanks for your call. We'll go to Cameron, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Cameron. Go ahead.
Hi. First, I just want to say thank you so much, Congressman, for taking the time to join this program and to answer questions for your constituents. My question was specifically about health care for those that are currently unemployed. I'm currently unemployed. I was unfortunate enough to be relatively financially stable, but should I contract COVID-19, I do not have health insurance currently. So I just wanted to know what Congress is working on as far as treatment and payment for treatment for those that contract COVID-19.
Well, I believe it was the second package that Congress passed. It could have been the first, but I believe it was the second that made clear that some of these instances where we have uninsured individuals, if they have to come in for COVID-19 testing, if they have to have follow-on care that is related to coronavirus, that states would have some flexibility in working to cover that through Medicaid with increased federal coverage for that. Of course, it's got to be related to the coronavirus and for people who are experiencing symptoms. I guess all I would recommend at this point in time is reach out to perhaps the Maine Bureau of Insurance and see if they can't direct you to some resources to look into either getting you some insurance coverage or figuring out how that will be handled if you were to develop symptoms.
Cameron, good luck to you. We have an email here from Dan. Why can't Congress fund all of the health care needs? For example, why can't the federal government buy respirators and then loan them to hospitals? It seemed like it would solve a lot of problems and should have been done a month ago, but it doesn't seem like anybody in Washington has been paying attention.
Well, I think it was on March 6th that Congress passed first a $6.5 billion bill. The president requested $1.25 billion. Congress didn't agree with that. We thought it wasn't nearly enough. Turns out it wasn't. So we passed a $6.5 billion bill, with a billion of that going to state public health systems, much of this being focused on the procurement of medical supplies. You know, also early money to start looking into vaccine development. Now, that was back at the beginning of March. Second bill, again, putting more money towards this. In this most recent bill, also directing a minimum of $1.25 billion to each state, much more to larger states in the kind of heart of this crisis right now, like New York, but Maine even would be getting $1.25 billion out of the bill that became law last Friday. All of this is going to be directed towards helping our hospitals, helping with the procurement of equipment. That stimulus bill, I hate to call it a stimulus, to be honest, while these restrictions on the economy continue, I really just think it is relief. I think stimulus comes later when we're actually in a position. But there was over $100 billion more dollars directly to hospitals for procurement of equipment. At the end of the day, I think the federal government probably has the money to buy as much of the equipment as we would need as a nation, but that doesn't mean the equipment is readily available. This is a supply chain issue right now and a production one. We're heavily dependent upon manufacturing of much of this equipment overseas. The supply chain has taken a real hit, and a lot of confusion and chaos thrown into the supply chain beginning with this outbreak of this virus in Asia, and as it's made its way across the world now, you know, that supply chain disruption occurring in America. So the problem is more logistics, I think, rather than just a dollar and cents problem. I do think that we need some leadership from the top to make sure that as a country we're trying to procure the supplies we need rather than having each state battling for itself in one locality, outbidding another one. You know, we need to be working together to get the supplies to the greatest need.
We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to a special extended Maine Calling. During this hour, we are talking about emergency federal funding with Congressman Jared Golden. In the second hour, we will talk with the head of the Jackson Lab about the science of a pandemic. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On March 31, 1868, the Portland Press Herald reported on Charles Dickens' performance at Portland's Merrill Auditorium the previous night. The article commented that the elaborate props he brought with him were over the top. It also noted his diamond rings were a little unpleasant to our democratic simplicity. Charles Dickens was a firm friend of Portland poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and they frequently visited each other on both sides of the Atlantic, giving talks along the way.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
Many colleges have canceled or postponed graduation ceremonies because of the coronavirus. It's a big blow, especially for students who are the first in their family to get their degree.
I have been waiting for this day since I was little, right? To walk on the stage and have my family there to watch me and everything.
That and the latest coronavirus news this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, in this hour, we are talking with Congressman Jared Golden. What are your questions about how the new federal aid package works? Do you have other questions? Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Mike, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. Congressman, appreciate all the work that you do for our state and our district. The question I have is, why are the airlines flying at all? After 9/11, they were shut down for, I think, 2 weeks because of a threat of the possibility of a terrorist attack. Yet here we may have the same kind of conditions where we have a coronavirus person on board being transported to Florida or wherever, out of New York City or so on. So, plus, if there's only, you know, 10 people on a plane, why are they wasting the fuel that they're going to get from the taxpayers anyway?
Mike, that's a good question. I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think I was 19 years old when 9/11 happened. I was at the University of Maine, Farmington, and I don't remember exactly all the steps that were taken in regards to the airlines, but you know, I do remember that day clearly, and ultimately that's what led me to join the Marines. But I guess I would say that with any kind of businesses we're seeing for so many right now, hard to turn it off and turn it back on. For how long can they shut down operations 100% and be able to pick up the pieces and start is it 2 weeks, is it 4 weeks, 6 weeks? I don't know, but I do know that a lot of people still have a critical need to travel, even in the midst of all of this. Recommendations I've heard from people that you should try and avoid travel if you can, but also some of those same people like Dr. Fauci saying, would I travel for work if it were absolutely necessary? You know, for him a few weeks ago, the answer was yes. So I think people still do have a need for that type of travel to be out there, and we got to do the best that we can.
All right, Mike, thanks for your question. I'm sure others have that as well. We're going to go to David, who's calling from Newport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yes. My question is very simple. This is not the last pandemic we're going to have. What are you going to do going forward to try and prevent not the viral outbreak itself, but the pandemonium that we're experiencing now?
Great question. I think all of Congress is going to have to be held accountable after the fact for doing the hard work of looking back, learning lessons from this experience, and then actually trying to apply those lessons to preparing for the future. How many times should Congress have done that? This is not the first time we've seen new flu-like viruses, whether it was SARS in the past or closer to home, perhaps in 2009, the H1N1, not as threatening as the COVID-19, obviously, but there are certainly lessons to be learned during those times of crisis in the past. I think one of the ones with H1N1 was the ability to manufacture more quickly. Vaccines was something that Congress really looked into back in like 2010-11 timeframe, and was able to make some advancements in that regard. So what am I going to do? All I can commit to is the kind of congressional oversight that should take place after any crisis like that, to ask ourselves, what did we learn? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? What could we do better? And how can we do it better?
David, thanks so much for your question. A couple different questions coming in, Congressman, about the atmosphere in Congress right now and the work on the relief package. Was there a sense of bipartisanship, or is there a general sort of fearfulness right now?
Well, I certainly wasn't experiencing any sense of fearfulness. I was very eager to get back to Washington and be there to do my job, Jennifer. I think that I have concerns right now. Congress is out of session. One would think, thinking about 9/11, by the way, that we would have figured out as an institution how to conduct the business of Congress remotely in the 21st century with the technology we have available to us, and yet Congress can't even have a congressional hearing remotely because our rules require that we have a physical quorum. Those are the types of things that Congress needs to think about now and fix
for the future in case some other crisis arises that requires us to not be physically in Washington. It's very important that our democracy continues to function, that government can function, that we have congressional oversight. We just passed the largest stimulus that's ever been passed, $2 trillion. And I think Congress needs to have sleeves rolled up and be working right now to help speed the implementation. People calling in today, it's Tuesday, this became a law on Friday. They want to know when are those loans for small businesses going to be available. Will I be eligible? People wondering about the new expanded coverage on unemployment. Congress needs to be a part of assisting agencies, assisting, not just criticizing people like the Small Business Administration or Department of Labor, but at the same time being able to have hearings and other things over the next 4 to 8 weeks to ensure that we are making sure that taxpayer dollars are being spent responsibly, legally, to make sure that the $500 billion was set aside to the Treasury Department to make assistance decisions to bigger corporations. I'm very concerned about the oversight over that. Taxpayers deserve to have congressional oversight. And so, in terms of the general atmosphere in Washington right now, I'd say members of Congress are not in Washington. And given the inability to do a lot of this work remotely, I thought we should consider staying and working in place the same way many businesses are continuing to function out of need. Construction workers are going to work. People at Bath Iron Works are going to work. Certainly our healthcare workers are right on the front lines going to work and risking their lives. And I think Congress should be figuring out how we can continue to do our jobs as effectively as possible at the same time.
Congressman, we had a caller named Ellie who held for a long time and it got dropped, but my producer's notes say that she wanted to ask, she's a waitress who was let go because of the crisis and also makes some money being self-employed. Will somebody in this sort of situation be eligible for one of the checks?
So in regards to the direct cash payment, yes. Absolutely. I would assume she would be eligible. And then I also know that the expanded unemployment insurance assistance would cover self-employed individuals. So she should be reaching out to Maine Department of Labor for some further information about eligibility there. And I also think that a lot of the work that we've done in the last few weeks in Congress has made sure to consider things like tipped wage employees as well to make sure that the programs that we have put forward are going to cover tipped wages as well. So again, I would say they should be reaching out to if they're still working. I can't remember, Jennifer, did she say she was laid off?
She said she was laid off from her waitressing job, but also had some income.
Yeah, so on that front, unemployment insurance for to cover tipped wages should be something that is covered under the at least the latest legislation we passed last Friday.
And a sort of a related email from Savea. I earn my living making and selling handcrafted jewelry, and my income is unpredictable. I don't get 1099s, but I do pay self-employment taxes as a sole proprietor. Would I be considered eligible for the expanded unemployment benefits?
Short answer is yes. And again, I think you should be going to the Department of Labor website to look for the new guidelines around that. Some of the newer programs, they're hoping to get new information out either today or tomorrow. And so just keep your eye out. But yes, this will be covering individuals like yourself.
All right. Maine, this is from Jenny on Facebook. Maine's dairy farmers have been crucial and critical to ensuring that our neighbors, communities, schools, and the state has a fresh, local, high-quality source of milk throughout good times and bads. With prices dropping daily, infrastructure within the supply chain closing, food service being drastically curtailed, what is being done and what can be done to ensure that our dairy farmer families are not destroyed by all of this?
Yep. These are, these types of questions happening in many industries, whether it's, the dairy industry here in Maine, our fishermen, obviously, very concerned. Right now, I know that the law that we passed last Friday gave almost $10 billion in emergency funding to the Department of Agriculture for the support of agricultural producers impacted by coronavirus. And that would include specialty crops and people who are producers for local food systems, like farmers markets, as an example, livestock producers and dairy producers as well. And I would encourage you to reach out to our office, any of our offices, Lewiston, Bangor, or Caribou for more information on that.
All right. Well, we'll try to squeeze in another call here. We'll go to Chris calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? I was just wondering if there was going to be any kind of tax break for people that work through this who deemed essential, because it seems like the easiest way to figure out who those people are is just see who's still paying taxes right now through their employer. That's it.
Yep. I don't think that is anything that has been a part of the discussions. I do know that as we have done things like required that businesses provide up to 80 hours of sick leave for people impacted by coronavirus, or let's say people whose children are at home because of school closures and they don't have daycare, there have been tax credits created on the employer side of the Social Security payroll tax, tax credits to help offset the cost of that expanded paid time off eligibility or requirement, as well as we are looking at some of the things around unemployment insurance and others. There are tax credits that have been created for small businesses and others, I think, for the year 2020, and more information will be coming out on that as well in the weeks ahead. But nothing specific for tax breaks for individual employees, such as what the caller was talking about. I think instead where Congress went was the direct payments of $1,200 per individual, 24 for household, and I think 3,000 up to 3,000 per household with dependents, and that's for working middle class families. That benefit starts to phase out on income over $75,000 a year.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for your call. We have just about a minute. I'll ask you this tweet from Mal. Does the pandemic drive some new support for broadband internet service in our rural regions? Aren't we all safer and better when we disperse and connect?
I think everyone in Maine knows many people personally how important broadband access is and how limited it is in rural communities, something I have been focusing on, we've all been focusing on for years now. As people were talking about the law that was passed last Friday, some people were saying, shouldn't we be asking for money to expand broadband? Hard to expand access in the midst of something like this. But certainly as part of that look back to ask, what have we learned and what can we do to make sure that we're building resiliency in communities for dealing with a pandemic like this one or any kind of crisis, broadband should be a part of that discussion. We have so many schools closed all over the state right now. And how many children trying to continue their educations now through online learning, and if they don't have reliable and speedy internet connection, then they're at a real disadvantage, and that should be acceptable to every American.
Well, Congressman Golden, thank you so much for joining us this hour. I realize so many of your questions were not able to be answered in the hour that we had. And if you have a question for Congressman Goldman, or if you need some more information, please know that on the Maine Calling website, we're providing links not only to his office, but also to the Small Business Administration, the Department of Labor, and other agencies. Congressman Golden, thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hope you're doing very well, and look forward to listening in to the folks at Jackson Labs. I know they're doing important work right now to be a part of the response to COVID-19.
That's right. In our next hour, we're going to talk with the president and CEO of the Jackson Laboratory, Dr. Edison Liu, about the COVID-19 pandemic. He's going to answer your questions about the science, the way it spreads, and the statistics around the way that we track these pandemic diseases. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this news.
Bye.